This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ever met up with your ex in the company of your new beau and had anything other than a horrendous time? Tony Pulis has. Paul Tisdale, not so much. High Flying Canaries, top hatters, and analysis so cutting it makes Tyrone Ming's studs seem like those scissors you used to get at primary school that couldn't cut butter. This is the Totally Football League Show. Welcome again to the show that breaks down all things EFL. SJA award-nominated host Caroline Barker isn't here. I'm Matt Davis-Adams, not nominated for any awards as such, but my mum thinks I'm cool. I've got a panel with me today. First up, a man whose playing career spanned almost the entire alphabet, from Arsenal to Welling, with plenty of stops in between. It's Adrian Clark.
Yeah, hello. Yeah, some very short stops as well.
Were you ever tempted to get a move to FC Zurich just so that you could say you'd done A to Z?
Or 1860 Munich. Just go down the numbers route. No, I wasn't.
And next, the only legitimate Hall of Famer I know, a 14-club man. It's only Sam Parkin.
Morning, Matt. How you doing?
Very well, thank you. And finally, last, and in terms of Football League appearances, very much least, from William Hill, the incomparable Joe Crilly.
Good morning.
If you're new to this show, hiya, nice to have you on board. If you're a seasoned veteran, you'll have guessed that our first port of call is the Championship. Only one place we can start our roundup, to Elland Road, where Norwich moved back to the top of the table after a statement win 3-1 against Leeds United. Michael Spry's tweeted us, at the Totally Show is the handle. He asks, as a Leeds fan, should I be worried? 4 defeats in 6 now. Bielsa missed a trick by not playing Calvin Phillips in DM against Norwich. Clearly our best player earlier in the season, a barometer for the team. What do you think, Sam? It's been a couple of weeks we've been saying they don't need to be worried, but it's getting a bit worse.
Yeah, I think we'd... slightly now, yeah. I'm going to be careful today because we've got a new producer and Jeremy's an ardent Leeds supporter, so I'm feeling a little bit of tension in the room. I don't want to go too hard on him, but yeah, there's a few things that the Leeds fans are questioning. I think that the Phillips one's an obvious thing, given Forshaw was to blame certainly for one of the goals. I think Ayling's been coming in for a little bit of stick as well. Shackleton would be an obvious one to do there. Alioski at left back as well. I think we've maybe to give them a little bit of hope, point to the return of Bamford and potentially Izzy Brown as well, to give them that little bit more depth. But it is a concern, definitely. I wasn't a few weeks ago, and maybe we have to put it into context that it was against Norwich, who've got that phenomenal away record and are showing their real automatic credentials now. It's never been in doubt, in my opinion. I think Adrian's with me on that as well. But yeah, a little bit of concern for Leeds. I think it's going to be really important that they bounce back against Middlesbrough.
Adrian, what did you make of Bielsa? We know his press conferences have been box office all season, but naming his team in his pre-match press conference, if you were an opposition player or manager, would that get you back up a bit?
It wouldn't get my back up. I'd just be grateful, really, because it gives you the chance to prepare properly. You don't need to send a spy. So that's sorted. That's why he's doing it, I think. I think it's almost, again, it's a fallout from that. And it backfired. It made him look a little bit silly, didn't it? If you are the Norwich manager, it's got to be a little bit of a leg up there. You can prep for it properly. What I will say on Bielsa as well is I don't think he got the half-time subs right. It sort of backfired a bit there as well. I'm not convinced about Alioski being the long-term left back. I know that Douglas is just coming back. But yeah, no, he had an off day. Bielsa, or an off week, didn't he, really, with that decision to name the team and also with his decision making during the game itself. I wasn't particularly impressed. Obviously Leeds fans will be frustrated because all three goals came from turnovers, didn't they, inside the Leeds United half, and questions will be asked over the philosophy and the decision making, but I'd look beyond that and just say that it was an off day, and they came up against the Norwich team. They were utterly inspired. It was one of the most professional, most outstanding team performances I've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, we ought to give some praise to Norwich, Sam, haven't we? Because for as disappointing as Leeds were, they were terrific.
They were, yeah, and they got a little bit of good fortune as well with the deflection on the first and the third goals. But yeah, I think Jamal Lewis and Aarons kind of typified the performance. Lewis missed a few games early on in the month or last month, and his energy getting up the left flank for the third goal, the Vrančić goal, that sealed it, was phenomenal. And I think Pukki just sets the tempo. You know, whenever you're playing in the side and you've got a forward who's got goals in him but also works so hard for the team, the first line of that press. And I just think they're better all round on the ball. They've got more trust in each other's ability. Leeds look like they're under pressure when they're trying to play out. Norwich look like they've got an extra second on the ball. And I think that basically underlines that they're a better side, throughout the season.
Very well coached team. That's what you can see, because these aren't superstar players, but their composure on the ball was just incredible. I thought all of them were brilliant. Vrančić, obviously, exceptional on the day. Stieperman, Hernandez, just so calm, really. And what's frightening for everyone else at the moment is that, really, if you think about Norwich, it's a new team. It's a team in development. It's a team that didn't know one another a few months ago. So what are they capable of moving forwards? We'll have to wait and see, but I'm super impressed with them.
And if you look at their next three fixtures, Ipswich, Preston and Bolton, I mean, you can say, well, Ipswich is a derby, but Ipswich this season haven't offered up much opposition to anybody. Leeds travel to Middlesbrough. It's maybe a good opportunity for Norwich to put a bit of distance between themselves and Leeds.
Yeah, possibly. Although, yeah, Middlesbrough had the great victory, I'm sure we'll come on to, but they have struggled at home. So Leeds will look at that one and probably play a different type of football, given that Middlesbrough at home will probably have a bit more of the ball. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, it's a derby, isn't it, for Norwich? So does it go out of the window? They've made a lot of changes, Ipswich, and they've got a lot of new players in there, but I can only see one outcome there. I think Norwich will be too strong at home.
All right, Bristol City up into the playoff places after beating Swansea 2-0, but that wasn't really the story here. 800 Swansea fans arrive early at Ashton Gate to cause trouble in protest at Chairman Hugh Jenkins, who subsequently resigned post-match. The Guardian writer and Swansea fan Stuart James tweeted on Saturday, "Didn't enjoy Ashton Gate today. Trying to stop a 7-year-old from being scared about fighting in the stadium in the first half, then in the park afterwards. Perhaps it's my fault for taking a child to that sort of away game. Either way, crap day." Now, this follows controversial transfer window, which saw Boney Montero and Tom Carroll leave, as well as deals for Leroy Fair and Daniel James fall apart last minute. Graham Potter, his name sung by supporters throughout the game, he's been working with at least one hand tied behind his back as they try and sell off his best players. Adrian, is it just as simple as a takeover gone wrong? Because they were a model club for so many
years.
Well,
not anymore, are they? It's amateurish, that's what it is. I thought the way they'd handled the Daniel James situation was so poor. On the player himself, just the courtesy of not picking up the phone, not doing what they had to do to get that deal over the line, just ignoring it, burying their heads in the sand. That's not on. And I think that there should be some kind of repercussion, really, for them on the back of that. I don't know how you can punish them, but it's bang out of order. No, the Americans are not investing, are they? It's as simple as that. They're cutting their cloth. You just got to look at West Brom, really, and the way that they approached relegation. Kept hold of most of their best players and have beefed it up big time, haven't they, in January. And lo and behold, with a new manager, they're in the promotion race. Swansea, with the manager that they've got, I believe would be in the promotion race had they had the same kind of attitude as West Brom. It's, you can only hemorrhage so many players. A lot of credit has to go to Potter. I think they've blooded, he's used more under-23s than anyone else in the Championship this season in terms of minutes. That's brilliant. I think he's doing a fantastic job. The fans can recognise it. But the ownership has been shambolic.
Would you think, Sam, if you were Graham Potter, you'd already be planning an exit strategy and thinking, well, these guys aren't going to give me any sort of backing. In fact, they're making my life more difficult than it needs to be. If he gets them to a reasonable mid-table finish this season, then would he be within his rights to say, that's as good as I can do here, I've done all right, I put myself in the shop window in England?
It's a difficult one because of the way he's got his opportunity, having been abroad. I think he'll be getting an enormous amount of plaudits for the work that he's doing. Is he in a real hurry to move on to a bigger club? I'm not so sure. He's proving that he's a good coach with what he's got at the moment. I was lucky enough to be there last week. You mocked me universally that I was in for a dud. 3-3 against Birmingham. And what I witnessed, I've just been telling Adrian, was a coach who probably played three different systems. He played Ollie McBurney as a number 10 in the first half and Daniel James as the central striker. Ended up with Kyle Naughton in central midfield. He's clearly someone who's coaching the players, making them really adaptable so they can play different roles. thinking man's manager. I was really, they didn't get the result on the day, but I was really impressed with him. And the Swansea fans are obviously aware of this, singing his name the other day. But yeah, his hands are tied. He's doing a brilliant job. They've brought in six players since last summer and they've let 16 go. And obviously the quality isn't really there in depth. And I think that showed at the weekend because Fur was missing and Daniel James was obviously left out because his head wasn't right. And they were beaten quite convincingly by Bristol. So he's doing a brilliant job. He strikes me as someone that could maybe see this through, even though it's a really difficult spell with everything that's going on off the pitch. I'm not so sure. I think maybe his stock is growing.
And in terms of Hugh Jenkins, Adrian, one of those maybe where if we wait a couple of years, his legacy will look different to how it looks now, which is basically he's left them in the brown stuff.
Yeah.
But if we look at it overall, he oversaw them rising to the Premier League, winning their first major piece of silverware and going into European football with some great managers, Brendan Rodgers, Roberto Martinez, Michael Laudrup. You know, they're not getting anybody of that calibre anytime soon.
No, yeah, exactly. When you look at the big picture, he did a fabulous job. Look, I played against Swansea when they were in the fourth tier. It was the old Vetch Field. There's 4,000 or 5,000 there. It's unrecognisable, the club, compared to where they were. This was back in the late 90s. So no, the journey's been amazing. It's just the fact that, yeah, the last few years, obviously, he's been involved in all of these decisions that have gone wrong. There's been some truly terrible appointments, you have to say, with Bradley being probably the pick of the bunch. But yeah, he's obviously had enough of it. And the relationship's so poisonous now. It's best to walk away. And it'll be interesting to see which route Swansea go down here. Because the American owners, I think the perception down there in South Wales is that they don't really understand football. So they desperately need someone who understands football to be working alongside Graham Potter and identifying targets. I know that he brought his guy in, didn't he, Graham Potter, as the head of recruitment. I mean, what pointless role that's been, really. So if they're paying this guy, they've got to give him some funds to play with. I think with a bit of money, Swansea can get back into the Premier League with Graham Potter in time.
As for Bristol City, positive news for them. Andy Vyman broke a four-month goal drought. They do their first league double over Swansea in 90 years. As I say, move into the playoffs. Joe Crilly, what odds could you give me on Bristol City getting promoted? This is kind of a late thing. They've kind of come up on the rails quietly with nobody paying much attention to them. And sometimes that can be the best way to go about it. But I'm guessing they're still an outside bet.
Whoa. No, they're kind of. We've been talking about the big teams all season. We've been talking about the likes in the last few weeks of Hull, who made a small push, and Stoke, who made a small push and then tailed off. And now it looks like Bristol City are the team with all the momentum. And behind the big chunk of like the big six in the division, finishing at Derby there at 4-1. Bristol City are the next side at 7-1, ahead of Aston Villa now at 8-1. And then there's a big, big gap then until Nottingham Forest at 20.
Oh, well. West Brom 2, Middlesbrough 3. I asked last week, Sam, if Tony Pulis would troll Baggy supporters by going all-out attack and producing a thrilling performance, and he sort of did.
I'm not sure about that. I think they set up really well, obviously, and West Brom, since they made that switch, do have quite a bit more of the ball. But, you know, with that back five that Tony Pulis can utilise, Shotton and Friend as the full-backs or wing-backs, you know, they've got such power and such organisational skills that it's difficult to break down. They had to rely, obviously, on Asamoah Longo when he changed the system and got the two centre-forwards on there, two outstanding finishes. For me, it's just about whether Middlesbrough can start scoring goals and putting teams to bed at the Riverside, and whether West Brom can just tighten up a little bit defensively. That's going to be the big question for those two moving forward. The Harvey Barnes thing just is niggling away at me. That and missing Phillips as well. And they're just a bit light. I know it's great to see young players getting an opportunity in Harper and Field, but maybe now they've made these new recruits. I think Murphy could potentially come in and do that driving. I don't know if he could play deeper, but certainly Montero's another option in that front three. Livermore to come back in, maybe. There's a few changes I think Darren Moore can make just to arrest this little slide defensively that they seem to be on.
I think he'll change the team quite dramatically in the next few weeks compared to what we saw in this game. It didn't work. I think Gale on the left of a three-pronged attack isn't really getting the best out of him. I think he has to devise a system where you've got Gale and J-Rod sort of working a little bit closer together. He's got the wingers now, like you say, with Murphy and Montero coming in. I agree with Sam. Harper Field, two good young players, aren't they, with Barry in there. You can see the balance there. But there's quality to come in with Johansson now, in particular. They've got to use him.
He's an obvious one, yeah. Probably for Barry in there, isn't he? Because he hasn't got the legs to do that driving running, but to be someone a little bit more mobile, aggressive.
Centre-half is the one, though. He brought in some really good players, West Brom, but no real massive upgrade at centre-half. And I think that is the continual problems at centre-half. They don't look quite right to me. And for that reason, even though Tony Pulis says they should be in the top two, which is quite a nice little dig, I thought, at the final whistle, I don't think they will be in the top two because I don't think they've got that clean sheet mentality that you need.
And in terms of Middlesbrough, Pulis said it wasn't any the sweeter, the win, given the abuse that he was getting. I don't think anyone believes that. Now, Son Belonga, as we mentioned, came off the bench. Hasn't quite worked for him under Pulis since Son Belonga came in from two-time European champions Nottingham Forest. But if he has a decent end to the season, he's almost got it within him, certainly, to get them into the playoffs and cement that place on his own.
He's got a bit of X factor, hasn't he, Son Belonga? He can score goals out of nothing from mistakes, as we saw at the weekend. He's got a bit of pace. He scored from outside the box as well as in it. I like him. I think that him and Hugo can have a really good partnership, actually, if, and this is the big if in capital letters, Tony Pulis is brave enough to go with a front two. We know that it's not really his thing, but it was his thing at the end of that game when they were trailing. Took off Fry, stuck him on, went with two up top. It worked. Is he bold enough to do that against Leeds United? If he is, I think they can cause a fragile Leeds team quite a few problems, but my hunch is that he'll revert back to type and play the cautious one.
And just finally on these two, are they just a little bit behind Leeds, Norwich and Sheffield United in terms of not having quite enough to make an automatic promotion charge?
In my opinion, yeah. I'm sold on Leeds and Norwich, to be honest. I know that Sheffield United keep knocking on the door, but I think the two best teams we saw head-to-head at the weekend.
A couple of games in brief I want to touch on, Sam. Blackburn go two up inside 10 minutes at Brentford and lose 5-2. How does that happen?
It happens because you're playing against a team who have got some of the best attacking movement in a division and you've lost your two talismen. I think it's as simplistic as that. If you're playing in a team where you're heavily reliant on the quality of Dak, the target that Graham is getting balls into him maybe a little bit earlier, to take those two players out of your team has a huge impact just because you know you get it forward and you have confidence they're going to create stuff. So those two going off, the timings of the goal as well, Benrahma to get back to 2-1 quite early on in the game. What a spell he's having, by the way.
Yeah,
probably
good,
their pick at the moment, Benrahma. And then the nature of the equalising goal from Watkins, a long ranger, that happens. The third's a horrendous goalkeeping mistake. And then momentum, the crowd's up, and then they can start playing those little triangles and what have you. And yeah, I mean, those players, Canos, Watkins, Mopai, they're all in really good form at the moment. There's a bit of a concern about Brentford because they've conceded 5 in the last 2 since they've gone to a back 3. So that's a bit concerning moving forward. But no, they're capable of doing that. They've been capable of doing that for the last 3 seasons, probably. Maybe Mococho and Sawyer's back in tandem as well makes them a little bit more solid in that second half. So no, Brentford are fantastic when they're at full flight.
Good old Thomas Frank, he had it all along. Adrian, Steve Bruce started with a win at Sheffield Wednesday, boss. I would suggest that this is the ideal fixture away to Ipswich. They haven't got that pressure of your first home game. It was a narrow victory in the end, but perfect start for him.
Yeah, narrow victory, but looking at the game and what I saw of it, they battered Ipswich. It wasn't a 1-0 game. It was a 3 or 4. It could easily have been 3 or 4 if they'd had their shooting boots. So, no, perfect start. Clean sheets, not exactly been a regular occurrence at Sheffield Wednesday this season. So yeah, that's the place to start. I don't think Ipswich had the firepower to really hurt them. Yeah, 17 chances they created Sheffield Wednesday. So I think they're going to be fine moving forwards. Reach will obviously be really relieved because he missed such a sitter. And then the assist I thought was fantastic from him. So yeah, Reach has been excellent for Sheffield Wednesday this season. I think he got them the 3 points with that run and cross.
Sheffield United, meanwhile, sorry Joe, saw off Bolton. Scott Hogan, Already proving an astute signing, Sam. There was a good shot on the highlights of this game of him warming up, and then the next shot is of McGoldrick scoring, and then Sharp scores. Is it one of those where you just kind of think, OK, well, I've got to be on my toes now because this guy can come on and replace me?
Yeah, and they got Medine and Dow now. They've got better strength there. I don't think there's any doubt that they're the front two, Sharp and McGoldrick. They've been fantastic, their partnership recently. But yeah, it's like a bit Neil Warnock-esque, isn't it? Stockpiling strikers in Sheffield United teams of old. But they're looking fantastic and didn't play well at all, according to Chris Wilder. It was a really ugly victory. And Billy Sharp, assist, very unselfish for a player of his kind of... I suppose how direct he is in front of goal. Normally he'll take that strike on, but squared it and obviously got himself a header as well. So
great ball in, wasn't it, for the header? Were you a bench watcher as a player? Like, did you look and see whether the striker was warming up?
100%. 100%. You knew start of the second half, if you've had a poor first half, you knew those 10 minutes at the start of the second half were so important. Every touch had to be secure.
Massively.
Otherwise, around about 55, 60, the third in-line striker is getting warm.
I only ever played for an hour. Like, I always planned for an hour because I was a winger. Like, wingers, it's always either number 11 or number 7 gets the hook first up. So you can never assume you're going to have 90 minutes.
Hey, you even knew it at half-time. If the striker was told to go and get warm at half-time, you thought, oh, no, 55. I've got 10 minutes to notch here.
Yeah, but Hogan and Medine, of course, are on the bench as well. So I think Wilder's done a really smart thing there in getting four proper strikers. There's nothing wrong with Sheffield United. I just feel, even though they're a really good team quality wise, they're just a slight rung below Leeds and Norwich, but yeah, maybe they'll prove me wrong.
We ought to have a moment's quiet reflection for Nelson Oliveira's good looks. So he gets his face sliced open by the boot of Tyrone Mings as Reading and Villa draw 0-0. Mings then tweets a half-hearted apology. He said, "Absolutely love wearing the claret and blue today and over the moon with the clean sheet!" At AVFC official. "Feel awfully sorry to Oliveira. Hope he's okay." Then somebody called him on it and he replied to them, "No one feels worse than me." Now, he's not going to get any punishment because apparently the referee saw it. He's got previous for this with Zlatan Ibrahimovic last season.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure you've seen it, Adrian.
On the train down, I watched the GIF on repeat. Just so I was really sure whether, you know, I believed him or not. I still haven't got a clue, is the bottom line. All I'll say is that he is incredibly off balance at the time. And when you're stumbling like that, I don't always know that if you can control your other foot. So I would be inclined to give him the benefit of the doubt. I know that Sam's not as sold on that as I am. The previous one I didn't think he meant either. Maybe I'm just, because it was never really in my head to go out and hurt anyone. It's just not in my mindset, really. I always think that's the case for everyone, and perhaps it's not.
Surely some most players go their entire career without standing on somebody's face. And he's done it twice in a season.
That's the point I was going to make. Even in training, I don't remember ever stepping on someone. Cue someone tweeting in who I played with at Northampton in 2001. But no, I don't remember ever stepping on anyone. Dean Ashton summed it up, didn't he, on Saturday night in the highlights. Only he knows. Yeah. But it's happened a couple of times now. It's a horrendous injury. The thing is, it's... The reason it's confusing is because Tyrone Mings is everything a footballer should be, really, off the pitch. I think he does a hell of a lot with charities, etc. Came through in the non-league, come through from Chippenham, I believe. I've got to be careful because I know a few people in that part of the world, the manager and supporters, etc. But he's supposed to be a brilliant lad, so that's why it confuses me a little bit, but... I mean, the injuries were horrendous.
On the tweet, we shouldn't judge him on the tweet because, first of all, if I'd have done that, I think I wouldn't have wanted to sort of sound like I was incriminating myself either. Do you know what I mean? I would have played it down as, I hope it's okay, obviously.
But would you not have said, horrible accident that happened today, really sorry?
Yeah, I would. I probably would have, but it's. I don't think we should judge him solely on that. I don't think we can also accuse it of being a completely hollow tweet. He was stumbling. I think it was quite unlucky.
Certainly wasn't a hollow tweet from Mrs. Oliveira.
What did she say? I didn't see it.
She was absolutely devastated because her gorgeous husband is no longer gorgeous.
Yeah, I'm not as gorgeous as Oliveira, clearly. But it did happen to me, not the same. But a player for Plymouth jumped for a header, went for a sort of a flick on, and jumped. His trajectory took him into my mouth. So he came up from quite a low position into my top lip, and you can see, I don't, it's obviously not good radio, but I've got quite a big scar on my lip there. My lip was hanging off. It was completely open, and it was just horrendous. I looked like the Elephant Man. And I think I've told this story before, but I walked past Nathan Jones, who was a left back at the time, and he just laughed at me. He just couldn't stop laughing as I walked off. Like, he had absolutely no sympathy.
Not at all.
We were good mates at the time, but yeah, I looked at him slightly differently after that. But I went into the dressing room, and yeah, I caught sight of it. It was horrible, and I got stitched up with no anaesthetic. Fair play to the doctor, because it's not that bad now when you think about it. But at the time, for about 2 weeks, my then girlfriend, she couldn't look at me. On one side of my face, I looked normal. And on the other side, I did look like the Elephant Man. So these things happen.
Shall I top him?
Yeah.
I think I've told it before as well. Well, Dan Harding kicked two of my teeth out once in a playoff semi-final against Brighton.
And did he apologise to you for it?
I played with him about 2 or 3 years later, and he's a great fella. So we just laughed about it, to be honest. And he wasn't that type of lad either, Dan. But that was pretty severe, similar one to Adrian, really. But the worst one was... kicked in the face on a Friday by a Dutch trialist at Ipswich. And I've told it before, Joe Royal used to drive a golf buggy around the training ground. So according to the lads afterwards, obviously I was in a bit of shock. It was coming, the blood was coming out like a shower from one hole, and it was projecting out of the other hole. So Joe Royal got me on this golf buggy and took me back to the medical centre. And supposedly the girls were like diving for cover, the two that worked at reception. And you could visibly see my... skull, as far as I know. And I was very fortunate because the A&E was very, very close to the Ipswich training ground. It's a Friday, by the way. We're preparing for Sheffield Wednesday at home the next day. Our club doctor was working on the A&E, so he got me in straight away, and he was so meticulous with it. And when it's hot or when I've been heading balls or something, the scar's still evident, but he'd done an unbelievable job. Incredible job. If I'd have been rushed into an A&E, I probably would have looked a bit of a mess. But I missed the game the following day, and then I played the following week, wrapped up like a mummy at
Did they
Mill.
Take on the trialist?
They were never seen again, Adrian. Two of them, two Dutch lads, yeah. And it was, you know, when you go to just cushion it, I went down to cushion a header back into midfield to my midfield runner, and he just, you know, straight away I was just like... why a trialist? Like, if it was Fabian Wilnes or Jason DeVos or whatever, I would have just taken it, but not a bloke who's in for one day and one day only.
Yeah, you're out. You know, Kolo Touré at Arsenal, by the way, on a little tangent, he got taken on by Arsene Wenger on the back of crunching everybody in training. He absolutely leathered all of the players, and they were like, "Where is this guy?" And I think it just impressed Wenger that he had the sort of nerve to do it. Took him on, and yeah, turned out to be decent.
For both of you, with those gruesome injuries, did it have a psychological effect when you go into your next game? You can't just put that out of your mind, can you? Something that horrific.
It was pretty worse for Sam than me. I mean, your mouth, you just... No, I kind of forgot about it. But you... Obviously, you heading was a big part of your game, I'd imagine.
It was fine. It healed so quickly. It healed within a week, 10 days. And like I said, I played at Millwall the following weekend and scored from a Darren Curry, who's been flavour of the month on this show, from one of his deliveries.
Curry often is, isn't it?
But I actually abandoned the bandage halfway through the second half. But it was, at the time, it was, yeah, I was black-eyed and obviously I had the big scar down the forehead. It wasn't very pleasant, but yeah, fortunately, the Ipswich doctor was on hand.
Yeah, I thought, look, girls, they like a scar these days, don't they? I think Mrs. Oliveira, she'll grow to love it. Sure.
Apologies to the squeamish for that last section. Briefly, hole 2, Stoke 0, Sam Vokes missed a pen on debut, fourth different player to do so for Stoke this season. They missed 8 out of the last 10. It's a calamitous campaign. I think we've got to call it that. Odds-wise, Joe... what did Norwich winning do for the odds on the title winner?
Well, you won't be surprised to hear that Norwich are now favourites to win the title. They've overtaken Leeds. They're 13-8, but Leeds just behind at 7-4. Sheffield United still clinging on, even though Adrian doesn't fancy them, 4-1 to win the title.
And a pretty interesting market would be the top scorer, Billy Sharp and Tammy Abraham on 19, Timu Pukki 18. Abraham, I'm going to put him as the favourite.
Yep, you're right there. It's that this race for the golden boot in this division is as tight as it is to win the title and to get promoted. And as a result, the top three or four in the betting are really close. Tammy Abraham 2-1, Billy Sharp 3s, Timu Pukki 4s, and Neil Morpay at 5-1.
All right, those are the big stories from the Championship. Next, like a 34-year-old striker on a Bosman, we're dropping down a division to League One specifically.
Make this an every Saturday super with the Super Saturday Reloaded coupon from William Hill. Available in all William Hill branches across the UK. With more prizes on offer than ever before, your new Super Saturday competitions offer you the chance to win a share of £1 million and some additional extra goodies specific to your region. All you have to do is select the number of goals, corners and cards across three selected football matches. Super Saturday football and racing competitions are free to enter when you bet £10 at your local William Hill. T's and C's apply. You can find out more at williamhill.com. And remember, when the fun stops, stop.
League One then, plenty of big results this weekend. Barnsley beating Scunthorpe, Portsmouth and Doncaster drawing, Luton winning again, Sunderland picking up a big 3 points. Want to start there with Peterborough 0, Plymouth 1. First home game back for Darren Ferguson. Not a good result after I'd watched him play at Bristol Rovers in midweek and they actually looked okay there. Lee Tomlin, Sam, gets another red card, his fourth red in his last 21 posh appearances across two spells. Since joining them in 2010, he's been sent off seven times in 135 league appearances for the club. He's a player who could and maybe should be playing in the Premier League for Cardiff this season, but he wasn't registered in their squad. I saw him play for Forest last season. He looked okay, if like an Andy Reid light or an Andy Reid heavy. Has that indiscipline in his career cost him? And surely that's got to be on his mind now.
It might have done. I've noted down, well, I've put down Maverick, tortured genius.
Is this you or is this Lee Tomlin?
This is Lee Tomlin.
Right.
I just think sometimes maybe the reason that he hasn't made it at these other clubs, it could potentially be down to discipline, but maybe because he finds himself back in League One and because it's his kind of happy place and he feels so relaxed there, maybe he gets away with it a little bit at Peterborough, whereas you wouldn't at the higher level. And I think he just feels at home there. Do you know what I mean? So maybe that ill discipline comes out at times, if that makes any sense. He's obviously a very talented boy. He should be playing higher. And yeah, I think at the weekend, Adrian, I don't know what your take on it is, but I actually looked up the rulings yesterday about raising your arms in football, because for me, he's acting as the peacemaker. Yes, there's a bit of force in the shove, but Ryan Edwards should be embarrassed. Should be absolutely embarrassed when he watches that back. Again, like Joe just said, you know, about stamping on players, did I do it in my career? I never went down like that during my career. I mean, even to get someone sent off, he should be yellow carded. Yes, Lee Tomlin probably put himself in the position to pick up his second yellow card, but I'd have liked to have seen the Plymouth player booked as well.
No, look, very little to add on that. I would have said exactly the same thing. Ryan Edwards, shameful, really. In no other situation in life would he have hit the deck there, ever. Wouldn't he? I mean, it wasn't. It was just a little hand in the face. I mean, it was an idiotic thing to do, wasn't it, from Tomlin on a yellow? But no, that's a player trying to get someone else sent off, and it worked, didn't it? Not great from Tomlin. A word on Plymouth, though. I mean, blimey, if the league had started in sort of November, December time, they'd be in the shake-up for automatic promotion, wouldn't they? I looked at the form table, third across the last eight games. Brilliant. I think only Luton and Barnsley are above Plymouth. So that isn't a shocking result for Peterborough necessarily, certainly not with 10 men. So I wouldn't judge Ferguson on that game. He's just come up against a Plymouth team that's found itself. And let's credit the manager there at Plymouth, because he was under a lot of pressure, wasn't he? Arguing with the fans. Yeah, I remember sitting here, a little bit like we did with Thomas Frank, thinking, I don't know if there's any way back for him. Derek Adams has re-galvanised the group, and they are not in relegation bother, even though the league table would tell you they are. Don't think they are.
Shrewsbury 0, Luton 3. We mentioned Mick Harford last week saying he doesn't want the job permanently. I'm not the long-term fix for Luton Town manager. We're in the process of finding a new manager, but I'll carry on if they want me to. Effectively doing two jobs, retaining his director of recruitment role. It would be a mistake to bring somebody else in now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's who you go and get. That's the million-dollar question. There's no one jumping out of me.
No one wants it now, do they? Not at the moment.
I mean, they flirted with, like, obviously they spoke about Ryan Lowe and Michael Flynn and Steve Robinson, former teammate of mine. Yeah, you just keep going. They're such a good side. And the reinforcements that they've been able to bring in as well. I mean, the bench the other day, Hilton, Moncur now, Jason Cummins, Baptiste. It's incredible, really, the squad that they've got. And Mick said that openly that they weren't at their best at the weekend, but a clean sheet, another three goals, Collins in ridiculous form. I think he's got 7 in the last 4 or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, they're in a great place. And interesting seeing Shrewsbury trying to match them up, which I thought was strange. It made me think of a game at the back end of last season when Barnet did the same, went to a diamond when they played at Kenilworth Road. And they don't get flustered by that, Luton. They just stick to their principles and they find a way to win. And they did it recently against Charlton as well, Shrewsbury. And I just think if you haven't got as good a players as the team, the opposition, try something different. You know, play an extra man in midfield or play back five or something. Just do something to try and destabilize the team who are clearly superior. So yeah. I think Shrewsbury in a bit of trouble. And without Okunibiri, who's had to wait for his opportunity this season, I think 5 points better off they are because of his goals. They could be really in the mire.
Yeah. Sheffield Wednesday, by the way, matched up Luton. Real sign of respect in the FA Cup replay that I was at. But they have players that are just as good, if not better. And it kind of worked for them. One thing Mick Harford deserves praise for a lot of things he's doing. But Kazenga Lualuwa is someone that he's shown a lot of faith in. Nathan didn't particularly use him. Obviously, he had his own favourites, and he was very much on the fringe. Lualuwa was excellent in the game I saw against Wednesday and has kicked on from there. He's like a bonus player, really, for Luton.
If he's the director of recruitment, Harford, then he can't complain about the players that have been brought in. My eyebrows were raised slightly when they signed Jason Cummings because Peterborough couldn't get shot of him quickly enough and Forrest didn't want him back. And the reasons for that are not footballing reasons. I'm sure we all saw the video of him trashing his flat. Somebody like that could potentially upset the harmonious dressing room that seems to be there. It seems a strange one to do at this time of the season for the team top of the league.
I'm not sure about that. I think he's probably a good lad. I've seen, obviously, all the social media bits and bobs, but the lads I know that have played with him, I think that they really all like him. I think he's a bubbly character. Mick will be tough on him. And he's a different type of striker. Hilton and Collins have had great success, but they're very similar. It reminds me when I played alongside Tommy Mooney. We were very similar, both bald as a coot. but just attack balls in the box, decent hold-up players. Jason Cummings will give them something a little bit different, off the shoulder, little diminutive striker. I think it's a good bit of business. And you know, Moncur and Baptiste as well, the experience that he brings in particular.
That's a follically challenged man, you might know. I've always wondered, what is a coot?
Oh, no idea.
No, nor have I. Say bald as a coot, don't you? Absolutely clueless. Anyway, tweet us at The Totally Show. Sunderland 1-0 against Wimbledon. Just the one goal for the 8th league game in a row. Adrian, is Will Grigg the answer to finding the net a bit more frequently for them?
It could be. Yeah, it's not really happened for Charlie Wyke, has it? I think he got the hook again in this game. Will Grigg, it's a big investment, actually. I thought the fee was quite high, $4 million. It's not. I know that Wigan were sad to lose him, but no, I think he will potentially make the difference between them going up or not. It's by no means a guarantee they'll get top two. And the playoffs, I'll tell you what, the standard of this season's League One playoffs is going to be outstanding. Much better than last season, in my view. They will need all the goal scorers that they can get. They didn't play well in this game, awful by all accounts, but they ground it out, and it could turn out to be a crucial 3 points. Aiden McGeady, by the way.
Far too good.
He shouldn't be in League One. I think in the Championship he would be seen as one of the top performers. So, yeah, he's definitely at the wrong level, but clearly enjoyed himself, and there's a lot to be said for that.
Sam, Jack Ross can't have any complaints about recruitment as far as Sunderland are concerned. Obviously, they lost Madger, but the players that they've brought in this month ought to be enough to, well, certainly get a playoff place, but maybe threaten the top two as well.
Yeah, the goals are a concern. They have to be. Lewis Morgan came in from St Mirren, had a really good debut by all accounts, and he did fantastic for Jack Ross up at St Mirren, player he knows well. What a first loan for Sterling from Tottenham, obviously an unknown quantity in the league, but I mean, what a first loan to get to the Stadium of Light. Griggy, spoken about Griggy so often on this show, brilliant lad, talent. I never ever foresaw him having this type of career. He's exceeded my expectation of him, but he's a goal scorer, and at that level he is proven. So he should hit the ground running. But it's got to be a concern. It's got to be a concern, the lack of goals. But that said, they got that elusive clean sheet that they've been looking for at the weekend. Hard-fought victory. no game's easy at that level, and Wimbledon do make it difficult for teams. So I think, yeah, they're going to be playoffs minimum, but I think they're just short of challenging those other teams that we've already spoken of, or I'm sure we're going to come on to.
And as for Wimbledon, 9 points from safety, one would assume no way back for them. A big update from guest producer Jeremy Coots. Waterbirds whose heads have the appearance of baldness. This doesn't refer to the lack of feathers on the bird's head, but to their white markings. Bald has several meanings, one of which is streaked or marked with white.
It's a yellow for me not knowing what it is and using the phrase, isn't it? Yeah. It's poor.
Briefly, Adrian, Barnsley up to second after beating Scunny 2-0. Well done, Mr. Stendhal, but more arrested development for Portsmouth held at home by Doncaster. Yeah. You sort of think that Barnsley are peaking at the right time, and Pompey are running out of gas a little bit.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, Barnsley, just a word on them. What a young, super fit, sort of energetic team that they've built there with Daniel Stendhal. So, yeah, Joe Crilly and the team at William Hill have been backing them the whole way through, haven't they? Even though probably we've had our doubts at one stage or another. But they and Luton look the two at the moment, don't they? Brilliant going forward. 21 shots to 5 against Scunthorpe, who are one of the form teams in League One. They absolutely, you know, put them to bed. No bother at all. Excellent performance. Yeah, Pompey, it's all gone a bit pear-shaped. But a little bit like Sheffield United, they've stockpiled strikers. So, yeah, and it paid off for them, didn't it, at the weekend with Vaughan and Bogle involved in their goal. So Portsmouth, I think, will definitely be in the playoffs, but maybe their top two hopes are gone now.
What do you think, Sam Pompey?
I'm seeing them tonight in the replay at QPR, and it was a disappointing first game. Had a suspension and a few players injured as well. I think it's the midfield that's the big problem for them. It was Donoghue and Naylor against QPR in that first tie, and we spoke about how much they're missing Ben Thompson, and I think that's gone back to Millwall. I think that is a massive problem for them now that they've got the options at the top end of the pitch. I think that is the balance they have to get right, and someone to get after the ball and win the ball back, because I didn't see that in those two players I've just mentioned. And they took the lad from Shrewsbury, Bryn Morris, who made his debut at Luton's, now injured. I think he could be the answer, but that is the problem area for me at the moment. Got goals to carry them through now, but midfield an issue.
Joe, in terms of the odds, we're all pretty certain that Luton are going to be in the Championship next season. Who else are amongst the favourites to go up following this weekend?
Yeah, so promotion, Luton are 1-7, so you're bang on the money there. Barnsley, 1-2 second favourites. Sunderland, 8-13. But I think Sunderland should perhaps be a slightly shorter price given that they have so many games in hand. I know the old cliche is you'd prefer points on the board rather than games in hand, but you can easily see Sunderland winning 2, maybe 3, or picking up 7 points from those games in hand, which would put them right on Luton's coattails. If you're going a little bit further down in the promotion market, if there's anybody who could sneak in, Charlton 7-2 for promotion, Doncaster 9-2, and then it's a big leap to Peterborough, who have been pushing hard up until a few weeks back. They're now 14-1 to go up.
And in terms of the bottom, I mean, throw a blanket over any number of clubs, I suppose. There's 6 points between Southend in 12th and third bottom Oxford.
Yeah, Wimbledon are as good as gone. They're 1-14 to go down, but then every other team is odds against. Bradford and Gillingham both 11-10, Bristol Rovers and Rochdale both 7-4, Plymouth 2-1. I mean, we're just going up in half point increments here. Shrewsbury, Walsall 9-4, Oxford United 3-1, Scunthorpe 4. So it's incredibly tight. As the league table suggests, the betting is also very tight.
On Sunderland's fixtures, I've just had a look. They play from teams, if we count in Southend as being part of the relegation mix, 10 of their last opponents are from Southend downwards. So you can look at that two ways. You can look at that as if they're easy fixtures, or they'll be up against teams that have got an awful lot to play for.
All righty, we're on the home stretch now. Don't go too far there. We'll be chatting League Two next. A reduced schedule in League Two as 4 games fell victim to Snowmageddon, or as it used to be known, winter. We're going to start with the Paul Tisdale derby, Exeter 3, MK Dons 1. A rough return for the well-dressed one, Sam. 4 defeats in 5 for Dons, owning the playoff places by a single point.
is he starting to think maybe I picked the wrong job, or MK starting to think maybe we picked the wrong guy to try and get us back up? It's a pretty spectacular fall off.
Well,
I think first and foremost, we're going to have to admit defeat on MK Dons. We were, you know, I thought they were one of the two best teams in the division along with Lincoln, and it's going to be a scramble now for them. I think there's a few things not transpired against them, but a few issues. Jordan Moore-Taylor, another former teammate of mine, brilliant lad, used to pick me up and ferry me around from the station. He's been missing through injury. He's been a linchpin of that back three, I think, throughout the season. Healy going back to Cardiff, I spoke about last week as well. Anike's been struggling with a bit of a niggle. I think there's a few issues there moving forward for Paul Tisdale, and a lack of activity. I know Hesketh came in late on in the window, but I think they needed probably bolstered in a few more areas just to give him a little boost. I don't know, it was funny seeing Paul Tisdale like that after the game, because he was obviously very disparaging about this team's performance, but also the pitch at Exeter. I don't think he meant it in that way, because it was a conversation I've heard him have quite a lot of time. You know, this is League Two football, chaps. You need to play a certain way. If the facilities are like this, if the weather's like this, you have to go long, or you have to do this. He wouldn't do that about a club he knows so well, and about people that he knows so well, the ground staff and people like that. He wouldn't have been disrespectful. That's just the way, you know, he looks at the variables in every fixture. So I think maybe too much has been read into that.
But it felt a bit like he was reaching a bit, Adrian, to me. I mean, it's winter football. There's a low sun. There's very little opportunity to play football. They've got to get a lot more streetwise.
Yeah. It's just the way he speaks.
I think so. I do agree with Sam. But I don't think he should bury his head in the sand in terms of the group that he's got. Are they willing to tough it out? Because League Two isn't just about playing nice football, knocking it around at Stadium NK, where the surroundings are lovely. It's not just about that. And they do have a reputation, not just this year, MK Dons, of being the kind of team that don't really fancy it. And their waveform's been quite poor the last few years. It's fallen off a cliff this season. When the going gets tough, are they up for it or not? I think that's the big question mark, I would imagine. I mean, what's Tisdale like in that regard? Will he fire a few up? Would he be strong enough to bin off a few characters if he thinks they're soft touches? Because from the outside looking in, that's how it's beginning to look.
Maybe not Paul Tisdale himself, but within his team, yes. I think Danny Butterfield is someone. Matt Oakley maybe not, but Danny Butterfield would be someone that would have a few words, and Steve Perryman's obviously involved as well. I don't know what Steve's involvement is now, I wouldn't want to say, but at Exeter, when things were particularly bad, quite often it was called for Steve, and he would let you know in no uncertain terms. He pretty much ended my career, Steve. But yeah, it was just strange just seeing that after the game, because I think people looked at it that he was having a go at Exeter. I didn't read into it that was the case.
But we should give some praise to your
Definitely.
Old club, Exeter, too. Only behind MK on goal difference now, up to 7.
Yeah, and after losing Stockley as well. So that's a huge result, and pressed really high. Obviously, still felt that Exeter, that MK Dons were going to try and play. That's probably what Tiz is getting at. Shouldn't have done so, should have been a bit more forceful within their football. So you have to credit them. And there's a lovely, well, I was going to say a nice balance between youth and experience. There's a lot of experienced players in that Exeter team now, in Fort and Moxie and Law as well. So Archie Collins is a young lad who's getting rave reviews. But no, a fantastic result for them, and they've put themselves right into contention.
Yeah, no Boateng, of course, who's been their driving force in midfield, as well as Stockley. So I think brilliant. Across the last 8 games, only one team has got more points than Exeter across 8 games. So this wasn't a fluke result. It's been coming. That's Carlisle, by the way. So Exeter, they've had that little wobble, and now they're back again.
Speaking of little wobbles, Notts County 1, Lincoln City 1. New Notts signings, Stubbs, Rose, Mikael Smith, and in particular Michael Doyle, impressing for the bottom side. They're 7 points from safety. They've only won 4 of their 30 games. It still looks like an awful long way back for Neil Ardley's team. He was full of praise for Alan Hardy for getting some players in short time. Can they stay up?
Well, they can. Yeah, it's... Have they left it too late for the revamp? Well, I guess they couldn't revamp it before January. Was it 7 of his 8 January recruits played? So it's a new team. It's a team that's not scarred by the the stinkers of the season so far. And that's really, really important, isn't it? I think Doyle is a great signing because he is a manager on the pitch. I know it's a boring old cliche, but he really is. Quite surprised that they managed to get him out of Coventry. So well done on that. I was interested to see that they had a couple of young centre-halves. The two regular centre-backs who've had a tough season, as Duffy and Brisley, completely out of the squad for this weekend. And Sam Stubbs got great reviews. He's only 20 from Middlesbrough. So he's putting his faith in a couple of young centre-halves. So yeah, we'll see how they go. Notts County, it's a mountain to climb though.
As for Lincoln, Sam, their supporters brought inflatable penises for the day, but it was John Akindi who cocked up with a penalty miss. They're getting a bit twitchy. Successive draws, Mansfield breathing down their necks. It's not looking as nailed on as it once did.
No, not for me, no. I think they're the best squad. Now they've got a few additions in. John Akindi scored some important penalties this year. That's how he takes his penalties. Yeah. You know, anyone who's having a go at him doesn't know football. He's missed 4 in 60 in his career or something along those lines. So the Cowleys know how important he's been to them. There's been a little bit of criticism from the Lincoln supporters, but I think that's because Matt Reed's such a hero up there. That focal point is always the one who gets a bit of abuse. God, I know it. No problem with him missing that. I was interested in the penalty because it was Stubbs who gave it away and on Andrade. I think Andrade was really clever with it. He stepped across the Notts County defender. I thought it probably is a penalty, but again, it's not something that I would have done. It's something that's creeped in to the modern game. But no, I think Lincoln will be absolutely fine. I just wanted to say on Notts County, actually, Forest Green away, Mansfield at home, the next two.
Ooh. So they've got a terrible record against Mansfield.
And after that, they only play three of the top seven. I know you've got to play everyone, but in the last 14, three of the top seven and only one away, Carlisle. So I think this next two games is really important for Notts County because of Morecambe and Macclesfield have got winnable fixtures. If they don't pick up anything from these next two games, I think the mountain's too high.
Another top v bottom game at Field Mill. I know that's not the name these days, but it's Field Mill to me. Always will be. Mansfield v Macclesfield. Mansfield win it again. Adrian, you mentioned Tyler Walker and his late goals.
Yeah.
So I looked it up. 14 of his 16 in the league this season have come after half-time.
It's incredible, yeah. And get this, 8 of his 16 in the final 15 minutes. Half of his goals this season have come in the final 15 minutes of games, which shows...
Is that just his superior fitness?
No, I don't think he's that much fitter than anybody else. He's obviously, he's a sharp front player, isn't he? That could, when defenders are tiring, maybe he gets more opportunities. I guess that's where it's happening. It just surprised me because a lot of the time, a lot of managers take off strikers, don't they? Freshen things up towards the end of games. I always think that's a bit daft when you've got real predators in your team, because when defenders are tiring, that's when they often come good, isn't it? So fair play to Flitcroft for sticking with Walker in so many games, because it's paid off for them.
Yeah, I wonder if maybe he would have been a better bet for Martin O'Neill than Leo Bonatini if they could have possibly recalled him. Sam, Port Vale got a new boss. John Askey replaces the departed Neil Aspin. That relationship sadly ended pretty sourly for somebody who was a legend at Vale as a player. Askey was a former Vale youth player. He got Macclesfield up last season, but then struggled to adapt to League Two. Is it slightly surprising that he's gone back into another League Two club?
It's a really difficult one. I suppose the Shrewsbury one, you have to look at that and say that was a very difficult task to take over after what Paul Hurst had done last season. Massive overhaul of players, lost so many, brought in 16, mind you, and they did spend a considerable amount of money, 650,000, I think they did, last summer. But it just didn't really happen for much Shrewsbury, and it didn't sound like it was for the style of football. The brand of football didn't sound too bad at Shrewsbury. It was more, I think, his demeanour, the way that he fell out with the supporters and also the local press. Once that happens with the supporters, I felt there was only going to be one winner. It may be a better fit. You know, going into League One from being a National League manager, now being at League Two, safe pair of hands maybe till the summer. It's only a short-term contract, which really surprises me. But it says to me that they're probably going to take stock again in the summer and maybe make a different appointment. Probably less risky bringing in a John Askey now rather than going with Danny Pugh, Michael Tong. I don't know if Tongy wants to be a manager. He's a bloody great lad. But something like that probably would have been too much of a risk. Someone who knows the lower leagues and is a local guy potentially could do them till the summer. But yeah, it's a difficult one.
Joe, in terms of the odds for relegation then from League Two, from William Hill, presumably Notts are, you know, odds on. Who else is in and around, as they say?
Yeah, Notts County 1-6 to go down, but they were 1-7 last week, so that point has moved them moved their price in a little bit. Macclesfield 4-5 to go down. Port Vale, Sam said they'll be fine. The odds suggest that they'll be fine as well. They're 12-1, so that makes them seventh favourites to go down. Morecambe, really, at 2-1, if you're going by the odds, are the only team that will replace one of Notts County or Macclesfield. They're 2-1, and then there's quite a gap until Yeovil at sixes.
And in terms of promotion?
Promotion, Lincoln, still odds on to win the title at 10-11. Massively odds on to go up. Mansfield the same, Bury the same. MK Dons still slightly odds on at 8-11, with Forest Green 5-4, Carlisle 3-1, and Colchester 4s.
Let's have a look at some of the weekend's games then, starting with the Friday night fixture in the Championship. Villa against Sheffield United. Win for Sheffield United here. They actually go top on goal difference ahead of the weekend's games. They've kind of snuck up from nowhere.
Great incentive, isn't it, for them? It really is. And Villa's home form, not exactly been sensational, has it? So it's an opportunity, and Villa, a real test for their new centre-back pairing, Elphick and Mings. Would they be able to handle Sharp and McGoldrick? I'm assuming it'll be Sharp and McGoldrick. They've got the luxury now, they can mix things up. But yeah, look, if Sheffield United can go to Villa Park and win, they'll start believing in the way that Norwich definitely believe now that they can go up. I think that the Blades fans will get such a lift, in the players as well, if they can go to Villa and win. I just got a feeling that Villa, on home turf, Abraham loves a goal, doesn't he, in front of the whole end. I think Villa might turn it on in this one.
And in terms of the game we touched on, Sam, Middlesbrough against Leeds, a tough assignment given that Borough have got back to winning ways. Is Bielsa going to tell us his team in his pre-match press conference? Is he going to change it up a bit?
I don't know. It's funny, isn't it, to think maybe all this Spygate stuff has maybe just hindered them a little bit in the last few weeks. They won't want a sixth defeat in eight, obviously. Just after that big, heavy defeat at West Brom early on in the season, that's when they went on their brilliant run and stopped conceding goals. Well, they're shipping too many at the moment, and we've spoken about a few of the reasons. Probably the personnel and maybe getting Phillips back into that holding midfield role. So there are some changes that I would probably make if I was all of a sudden Leeds manager. Be interested to see if Bielsa does likewise.
If we look into League One, Bristol Rovers against Shrewsbury, big game at the foot of the table, just days after the Shrews will have had their FA Cup replay at Molyneux. So I guess Bristol Rovers will fancy their chances of maybe capitalising on any fatigue that might be there.
Yeah, that's something that comes into play now. I think it's going to be an interesting factor at the top end of some of the divisions as well. Cup football coming in. Bristol Rovers got a good win at Southend. Tom Nicholls seems to be finding a little bit of form. Liam Sercombe, who was linked with a move to Pompey, back amongst the goals. So, yeah, it's not been the best start for Graham Coughlan, but a really morale-boosting victory there.
Yeah, I like the look of Plymouth against Portsmouth. Is it, what can you call that?
The Dockyard Derby.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it the Dock Derby? I've never heard of that, actually. But look, yeah, we talked about Plymouth earlier, form team. Just a massive test for Portsmouth as they, I actually think a draw at home to Doncaster, given the recent run Pompey have been on, isn't bad. Can they back that up and beat Plymouth, I wonder?
In terms of League Two, the game that caught my eye is a fair old trip for anybody who's making it as a away supporter. Carlisle versus Exeter. Two playoff contenders. Carlisle pretty strong at home, as we know. Can you make a case for Exeter there?
We just said that there's only one team, I think, above them in the form table, and that's Carlisle. So this is a real clash of the titans. I played in this fixture. Actually, no, the reverse fixture. I played for Carlisle at Exeter.
That's 5 hours, 26 minutes down the M6.
Yeah, it was longer than that. It was longer than that on a Friday, let me tell you. You could almost not double the journey time on a Friday, but obviously that's when you travel if you stay overnight. And yeah, regular 7-8 hour journeys on Fridays.
What's that like? horrible, presumably. Yes. You can't have a couple of beers the night before the game to make it pass a bit quicker.
No, it's horrible if you're in the card school and you're having a bad day.
Every other week at Exeter.
Yeah.
8 o'clock at the training ground, it used to be. Every Friday morning, pretty much. Every other Friday morning for an away trip. But there was a good Waitrose at the first services.
Yeah, you do get to know the service stations travelling up and down the country, that's for sure. Had a few warm-ups in service stations, the coordinated sort of stretches. Embarrassing, yeah. No need.
It's the type of journey that they stick Clem on the bus with the fans, isn't it, on the way down?
I think Ian McIntosh of these parts has done.
He has done a Carlisle, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Seriously, Sam, Waitrose.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I don't know what do you want the services. It might be Gordana.
No, I'm just surprised. I mean, I know you're a bit of a hipster. I thought Waitrose might be a bit too.
I just remember Aaron Davis, who I don't think Aaron's playing anymore. He was at Forest, wasn't he?
Yeah,
from Yeovil. About 10 o'clock in the morning, used to come on with sushi. That used to raise a few eyebrows, by the way. That was out hipstered me. But the extra away trips were good because. Very in keeping what I've told you about Paul Tisdale, probably on this show. We used to have a lot of homemade cakes on that bus, but the full, not cupcakes or anything, like full Victoria sponges for after your training. You know, on the Friday, if you'd stop where I'm en route, you'd have everyone getting weighed into cakes and what have you, and then you'd roll up at some 5-star resort as well. So that's where all the budget used to go at Exeter.
Did Paul Tisdale make the cakes?
I think, I don't know who made the cakes. Certainly Louise, the kit woman, used to make them sometimes, but Tiz used to partake in them after training. Definitely have a nice big slice at the front, but he might have made the odd one, yeah.
And Victoria Sponge is your go-to?
It's my go-to, yeah, but there used to be a variety, yeah.
Adrian, in terms of a cake, I peg you as a kind of lemon drizzle man.
I would love a lemon drizzle, yeah. Big fan of most cake varieties, I have to say. But yeah, lemon drizzle or a good carrot cake. Not an average one. I think I'd prepare to spend a little bit extra on a quality carrot cake.
That's insight. Follow that, Caroline. She'll be back from her Super Bowl sojourn next week. She promises not to refer to the act of keeping the ball out of the net as defence. Keep in touch with us via @TheTotallyShow. We'll be back next week.
You've been listening to The Totally Football League Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com and make sure you check out our brand new podcast for this season, The Totally Scottish Football Show with Andrew Slaven. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really, and here at The Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK, so that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.